Well, well, well. Welcome back to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. And once again, I have my good friend and Tropic Society around the campfire. We got some spooky tales to tell. The caves were marvelous, mysterious, breathtaking, unknown to most of the world. The small town of Chinoy boasted what should be regarded as one of the wonders of the world. The still pools of Chinoy Caves are something not seen in any other place. The shade of blue taken on by the water is indescribable, but memorizing once viewed. Many myths and stories are told about the caves, leading to a reference whenever one visits the almost holy waters. Walking down the seemingly endless and treacherously chiseled stairs that led from the mouth of the cave all the way down to the water, it is pitch black and silence fills the air. Silence, occasionally interrupted by the chatter and flutter of the wings of the bats that reside in the darkness. The darkness is all-consuming, and one feels an almost omniscient presence filling the caves, watching and protecting the magnificent spectacle to be viewed. The only lighting comes from the opening at the top of the caves, almost shining a spotlight on the deep blue water. You can see fish at the shallowest part of the pool, but the waters extend past where it's visible and continue into the darkness, where nothing can be seen, where anything could be hiding. Toby was speechless walking down the stairs, almost slipping on more than one occasion in the darkness, using his mobile phone as a means of guiding light. Once he reached the bottom, he sat on one of the rocks at the edge of the water and sat staring in silence. Taking out his phone once again, he took as many pictures as he could to show his brother. They were supposed to come together, but Frank felt that it would be boring exploring a cave. His loss. Taking off his shoes, he walked and dipped his feet into the water. The sunshine directly on the water had warmed it somewhat, and it felt heavenly on his feet. He walked deeper, almost up to his waist now. He seemed to be drawn into the water and couldn't understand the compulsion. Snapping out of the sudden trance, he blinked profusely in confusion and waddled back out of the water towards the rock he had sat on originally. He looked at the rocks around him and marveled at the natural formation of the rocks and walls. Nature was such an amazing creator. It would be impossible for a human to recreate such natural beauty. He felt blessed to be bearing witness to such splendor. A sharp splash in the water jolted Toby from his thoughts and directed his attention to the water. Swimming out from the darkness was what appeared to be a woman. Toby rose immediately and splashed back into the water to assist the woman coming towards him. As she swam nearer, he was amazed at the fluidity and ease at which she glided through the water. She seemed to slither through the water. He stood and watched. He was speechless as the woman submerged from the water. He had never seen such a beautiful woman. The water glistened on her skin, and her hair flowed endlessly down her back. She stopped where she was in the water and looked at Toby. They stared at each other, neither saying a word. Toby's eyes drifted from her spellbinding gaze, and realized she had no swimming top on. This made him wonder if she was swimming in the nude. Noticing where his gaze had drifted, the woman laughed. The sound echoing throughout the cave and sent shivers throughout Toby's spine. Embarrassed, he quickly averted his gaze only to her to suddenly speak. Her voice seemed to melt his ears. He felt the notes of her voice penetrate his mind and felt he had never heard a voice clearer. Why don't you come for a swim? Her voice resonated through his being. Before he could reply, he felt his body walk towards the water. He seemingly had no control of his actions, and before he knew it, he was neck deep in the dark and unknown water. She was a little way out from him, and he waddled towards her, trying to keep his head above water. Realizing he would get to her faster by swimming properly, he swam at full speed towards her. As he neared her, she turned away and began to swim. He saw the movement and stopped swimming immediately, merely keeping himself afloat as he watched her swim gracefully away. It wasn't feet that he saw her propelling herself with, but rather a full-sized tail. He had laughed off the rumors of mermaids and strange creatures in the depths of the water. Now he felt like a fool, as he had felt the inexplicable desire to follow this tailed woman to wherever she was going. She was getting further from him, and so he launched back into his pursuit of her. It was a mix of attraction and curiosity that seemed to propel him faster, and before he knew it, he was pedaling water in absolute darkness, with no idea of which way he came from. Panic overcame him and he began to flail in the water. Just as soon as he felt his heart pounding with fear, numerous sets of hands gripped his legs and pulled him under. The darkness surrounding the water enveloped him. It was no longer warm as it had been closer to the land. Now, it was icy cold, like death had taken a firm grip on him. Toby saw and felt nothing, only the numbness brought about by the painfully cold water. He was going to drown. Whatever had taken a hold of him was surely going to pull him deeper and deeper into the unknown. A sudden calm washed over him as he realized fighting was futile. He embraced death and was to let the water take him to his grave. As soon as he closed his eyes and loosened his muscles, he felt a sudden rush of air. A dim light wavered from a fair distance, and he realized he had been dragged to a sub-level of the caves beneath the waters. Coughing and gasping for breath, Toby laid still for a moment, appreciative of the fact that he was breathing in air and not water. Weakly, he sat up and saw what he was sure no other man had seen before. A lair made solely from the rock formations. And more astoundingly, more than one of the strange women who had led him here. They all looked alike, moving like serpents with their fish-like tails on the land. They were not as graceful as they were in the water. Toby counted 5 of them, all moving around the dimly lit habitat. Their tails made him extremely uneasy. They had extremely feminine upper bodies, but the lower body of a fish. The scales made a scraping noise as they moved, and he felt his hair rise with the noise. Oddly enough, he was still very much attracted to them. Not one, but all of them. He was captivated by their beauty. Noticing he was sitting up and surveying his surroundings, they all began to move towards him. "I can't wait to tell Frank about this," Toby thought to himself. "Thank you," he said to the group as they circled around him. "I thought I was going to drown back there. You saved me." The voice that came from the mermaid as she spoke was no longer seductive and smooth. It shook him to his very core. He looked up in sudden fear and saw their beauty had dissipated. The tails and midsections remained, but the faces had changed drastically. Gone was the beauty, replaced by dark, black, and soulless eyes, matched only by the gaping mouth, lined with teeth he had never seen before. Evil. He could sense the evil emanating from their very beings.
save you?
It asked him.
No, child. We merely brought food back to eat.
The immense cold he had previously felt had a biting effect. The pain inflicted where the woman tore into his flesh was unmatched.
After 2 months of, and I quote, structural management, the nameless organization finally decided to reopen the national park in the early winter months. They hoped that, since most people do not visit this particular park during the winter, that this would give the forest rangers enough time to get the park back in working order. This would require a remodel of the forest station and a resupply of the resources needed. They had to rehire a completely new staff under the direction of the nameless organization. They didn't want word to spread of what had happened earlier, and they didn't want word to get out into the public. For those wondering, the United States government does not recognize nor acknowledge the existence of beings or entities that cannot be explained by modern science. They are either classified as ongoing classification or as an unknown threat. The first day of opening, the unnamed organization brought in a mixture of both forest rangers and military personnel. The military personnel were to stand guard of the workers remodeling the forest station, as well as to accompany the rangers on their tasks. The forest rangers were to visit campsites as well as the facilities nearby and make sure that they were in working order. Both groups were unaware of what had happened previously at this park. Thus, they were confused at the level of security that was required to operate this location. Jason, a forest ranger that had transferred recently, joined the morning meeting that assembled outside of the forest station. Both the forest rangers and the military were mingling amongst themselves. Two black SUVs pulled into the parking lot, 20 feet away. A man dressed in a nice suit, accompanied by two men carrying machine guns, exited the vehicle and walked over to the groups. The entire group hushed down to a low whisper as the man in the suit introduced himself. "Good morning. You may address me as Director Borski. I've been assigned over this park. What we will be doing is rebuilding and fortifying this park here. It is very important to the United States government that this is done quickly and without delay. I have four rules for all those that are assigned under my authority. Number 1, no one is to be out past dark. Number 2, you will have a companion with you at all times. Number 3, do not use the military-issued road that leads into the park. And finally, no one is to speak to the public about what happens here. Any questions?" The crowd remained silent since no one wanted to be the fool to ask. The director looked around and saw that no one raised their hands. "Great, we're on the same page. The military is assigned here as a training simulation." The director and his two colleagues spoke to different department heads of the forest rangers and the military before leaving. We kind of stood around aimlessly while they were talking since no one was giving direction. That quickly changed when the director was done talking to the department heads. Once the director left, we were all paired into groups. I was paired with another forest ranger named Jackson, and two military personnel named Nathan and Andrew. Off the bat, Jackson introduced himself to the group. He was in his late 40s and gave off a cowboy vibe. Nathan was newly enlisted, and you could tell he was a frat boy. Andrew was more of a family man that was serving his country out of duty. Despite the wide variety of personalities, I felt lucky to be in this group. Nothing is worse than being stuck with some hard noses. We were also given walkie-talkies so that we could communicate to the different groups. We were assigned to check on the furthest campsite that was across the park. It would require us to take a service truck and drive 40 minutes. Thankfully at this time, the thick morning fog had rolled away and the overall visibility was tolerable. As we drove, I got to know Nathan, the military guy, very well. We sat in the truck bed, while Jackson and Andrew sat in the front. They seemed to get along fine. Nathan showed me his issued weapon, which I thought was interesting. I thought that they normally issued some sort of rifle. However, they gave Nathan a shotgun with dragon breath rounds. This seemed out of the ordinary, but I was new, so I guess I didn't know what was normal. We arrived at the campsite at the back of the park. Everything looked like it had been there for months, which was actually the case. There were small amounts of trash scattered, but nothing unusual. We worked our way back and checked in on random campsites. Most campsites looked normal, while others looked like they were scorched by some kind of fire. The ground and nearby trees were black and gray. All of us got out of the truck and investigated the campsite. It was cold out, but there wasn't any snow on the ground yet. This area is very wet all year round, so to see it completely burned definitely didn't make any sense. It looked as if multiple people took flamethrowers and burned the camp. Jackson, the cowboy-like ranger, squatted down and touched the ground.
You know, the odd thing about the char is, it only looks like it's covering the campground.
He looked around as if he was uneasy.
Something doesn't add up. Why do you military boys paired up with us?
Nathan shot me a glance, and I smiled. Great. We got a conspiracy theorist in the group, I thought to myself. Andrew remained quiet, but also scanned the tree line with Jackson. We got back in the truck and drove back to the ranger station. Considerable progress had been made on the remodel of the station, but was still incomplete. It was midday and we had food brought to us from the nearest town. After an hour of eating and laughing, all the assigned pairs went back out to finish their duties. Nothing happened that day, or at least no one said anything. At the end of the day, all the groups were assigned certain locations in the park that were close by to sleep in. They were either these heavy-duty trailers, or located in one of the fire towers in the park. My group got lucky, and we were assigned a trailer. We were given a strict curfew from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. Under no circumstances were we allowed to be outside when it was dark. Thankfully, the trailer that we were assigned to was nearby other trailers and had cable. It was a bit awkward having four grown men share a somewhat rather close space. Jackson was fine as long as he wasn't talking about his conspiracy theories. Andrew barely said anything, and Nathan and I were basically old friends at this point. Night came, but we were already inside. Thankfully, it was early winter, and we still had sports to watch. The night went on, and the evening was uneventful. We certainly appreciated the curfew, and slept in till 8 a.m. for the first time in a while. We met up at the forest station that was still being worked on. They told us it would take us another 2 or 3 weeks to get the station ready to house us again. During the morning assembly, we were reminded to stay indoors during curfew. There were reports of people being seen outside in the woods that were unaccompanied. Nathan and I locked eyes. Who would do that? I thought. Our group was assigned to stay and guard the forest station for the day, which was easy enough. We just sat around talking with the other groups and watched the construction company slowly change the forest station more into a base. There was a light snow in the air, but nothing stuck. Jackson started talking to the other groups and asked them if they believed in Bigfoot or something ridiculous. The more I was around Andrew, the more I realized that he was socially awkward, but he was becoming more comfortable around us. Nathan and I were talking when another group's truck came barreling into the area and parked outside the station. Instinctively, all the guys in my group grabbed their weapons and walked over to the truck. In the bed of the truck appeared to be two rangers applying pressure to the neck of an army man. His throat was bleeding profusely. From my first aid training, I already knew that he was a goner. The Forest Ranger Department head made his way over and walkied in support from the unnamed organization. He was barely alive when they finally arrived, but all the blood from his face had been drained. Nathan and I looked at each other in horror after seeing what we just saw. The First Ranger Department head told us that the man was injured would be taken to the nearest hospital, but that they did get the bleeding to stop. That event made the rest of the day go by slower, but it also put everyone on edge. All the personnel were coming up with theories on what had happened to the poor man. Jackson's theory was that one of his group members slit his throat, which was obviously ridiculous. Other more reasonable ideas that were floating around was that a mountain lion was trying to land one last hunt before hibernation. Mountain lions were quite frequent in the area and extremely quiet when stalking prey. Night eventually came, and the ranger station was still being modified. We had dinner and went inside before it got dark. All the department heads made final stops at all the trailers and fire towers to make sure that everyone was inside. We were all on edge with what had happened earlier, However, little did we know what horrors lay before us in the coming days. It was later at night when our walkie-talkie buzzed us awake. It was a group stationed in the fire tower on the other side of the park.
"Come in, this is Fire Station 2. Is there anyone on our stairs?"
Being annoyed by being woken up, Jackson got up and turned off the walkie-talkie. Andrew asked, "What if that's important?" Jackson said,
"It can wait till morning. Ain't nothing else out here but us and them animals."
I sided with Jackson and I went back to bed. The next morning we woke up and got prepared like normal. We made our way to the forest station and we saw that everyone there was conversing amongst themselves, but were trying to be discreet, as if they were trying to talk and not be suspected. I asked the group next to me what was going on, and they act shocked. "Didn't you hear what happened last night on the walkie-talkie?" I had a vague memory, but shook my head no. "No, what happened? We turned it off." The guy in the group was about to say something to me, but the Forest Ranger department head interrupted and started the morning meeting. The head ranger told us what goals he had for us for that day. He also said that there were events that unfolded the night before that were currently being investigated. If you see anything weird, be sure to report it immediately to either department head. I was dying to know what had happened the night before, but no one would tell me after the meeting. Nathan was able to get some information from his military buddies. Apparently, the group in the fire tower went missing. Everyone was on edge in our group, especially Jackson. The whole day, Jackson had his gun with him. We made sure to stick together, even when we went into town to get supplies. The forest had changed that day, not just because what had happened in the fire tower, but we could feel an odd sense of something now lurking in the forest. We also got faint smells of something rotting from time to time, especially towards the latter part of the day. We considered at one point to search for the source of the smell, but Jackson told us that it was the sign of something unearthly walking towards us. I was going to criticize him, but a part of me felt like he was right. The day was ending, and we were trying to install some lights at this pavilion on the other side of the park. We let time get away from us, and the next thing that we knew, it was starting to get dark. This wasn't an issue since we'd be able to drive back in about 30 minutes, but it'd be close. We entered our vehicle and started to drive quickly. The visibility was low and was only getting worse by the minute. We hit an unexpected bump in the road. We hit the bump so hard that Nathan and I hit our heads on the roof of the truck. As we kept driving, it said that the truck had low coolant. It was getting darker and we tried to continue on our way, but the truck sputtered to a stop about 10 minutes away from our trailer. We all looked at one another with wide eyes. We aren't going to make it back before it got dark. Jackson, being the self-proclaimed leader, told us to hop out of the truck and to start walking back. Seeing that we were too afraid to argue and to find another solution, we followed Jackson. It was dark in about 5 minutes into our hike. The intense smell came back and I was beginning to feel what I can only explain as lingering death slowly filling my mind. We had flashlights in hand as we continued on the gravel road leading us back to camp. Andrew was in the back of the group, but I could see his flashlight. It would frequently shine behind us, as if he was looking for something. At one point, we heard some rustling coming from the trees behind us, and everyone stopped to look. All of our lights were shining in a similar area where we thought we heard something. Jackson snapped us out of our daze, and we kept hiking back. We were almost back when we began to hear a blood-curdling scream coming from behind us. A scream that was both terrifying, yet so human. This gave the group the needed motivation to sprint back to camp without stopping. The men forced their way into the trailer and quickly locked it. The feeling of dread and the horrendous smell had long left their senses, but their adrenaline was in full swing. It took them a minute or two before they realized that the close group of four was now down to three. Andrew, who was in the back of the group, was not inside. He must have been left behind. The group considered their options. Do they stay inside as instructed, or go back out into the danger and try to find Andrew? Nathan got on the walkie and asked his department head what to do. They responded with,
You are ordered to stay inside. It is dark and no longer safe for you. Do not open the door for Andrew until the morning. That's an order.
The group fell silent and stood there horrified. I spoke up and said, "We can't just leave him here out all night." No one said anything. I knew that they were thinking the same thing as I did, but they didn't want to disobey orders. We sat there in silence and slowly thought about what we were going to do. Looks like Andrew would be spending the night outside. Later that night, when we were all in our own beds, not quite asleep, when we started to smell the same smell of death. I perked up and looked around. Our trailer had small windows on certain sections of the trailer. I got up and peered outside, but I couldn't see anything. It was far too dark, but I could see that it started to snow. Nathan saw that I was up and was looking out the window, and asked me what I was doing. I told him that I maybe thought Andrew would have came back by now, and I was looking for him. At that moment, our walkies came on. Jackson creeped out of bed, rubbing his eyes, and walked over to the walkie. "What was that?" asked Jackson. "Yeah, that's probably our guy Andrew. We lost him in the woods today," Jackson said annoyingly. Jackson walked over to the door and peered out the window. Jackson peered out, confused, for a minute or two. Despite the orders, Jackson opened the door and went outside. Nathan and I looked at each other with complete horror as we saw that he left the door open. We both had the same thought to run after Jackson, but we stopped at the doorframe. We saw that Jackson was only a few feet out, but he was barely visible. The walkie blared on again, telling us to get back inside. Jackson quickly turned around, ran back inside, and locked the door.
"We need to barricade the door," Jackson whispered.
We started to move our beds and heavy furniture in front of the door, and right when we did, we heard a bang on the door. It was loud and barely shook the door, but it was enough to give us all a scare.
"What did you see?" whispered Nathan.
Jackson shook his head and said that he thought he saw a young woman crying. But when he went outside, he noticed that her face looked extremely old and decaying, like that of a corpse. She started to twitch and shake when she noticed me. The bangs on the door were getting louder and harder. The walkie blared on again. We heard more banging on the door, and the frame started to crack. Not much later, we heard the fire of automatic weapons outside. We could hear some bullets hitting our trailer. To our horror, we began to hear screams that weren't human. Banging on the door stopped briefly, and the gunfire continued. We laid on the floor hoping that the bullets hitting our trailer would miss us. The walkie blared on again. The gunfire eventually stopped, but the screeching continued. We could tell that there started to be human screams from time to time. We walkied over asking what was happening, but no response. Things went eerily calm. The smell was thick in the air of dread and decay. We continued to lay on the floor out of fear if we made a sound, it would draw those things back to us. Despite us being silent, the banging began on the door again. Nathan got up and grabbed his shotgun, and I grabbed my service pistol. I could see out the window quick movements of shadows blur past us. They continued banging on the door, and the frame started to give. The door was about to give at any moment. I aimed my pistol at the door's window, where I could see matted hair, and I fired. Whatever was out there started screeching, but the banging continued. The top hinge completely broke, and part of the door had opened. Nathan fired his dragon breath rounds at the creatures, and they caught fire. To our surprise, the one figure that caught fire immediately fled. The screeching was more intense. Nathan fired again at the next creature. This creature made it halfway inside, but caught fire, and tried to turn around and run out into the snow. There were so many creatures pushing it inside, that all it could do was flounder around until it laid lifeless on top of the broken door. Fire seemed to be the only thing that damaged these creatures. Nathan was the only one with dragon breath rounds. Jackson and I tried shooting at these things, but they were not even fazed. The creatures finally broke down the door, and we could see what we were up against. These creatures were tall and lanky. Each one looked to be unearthly, but slightly human at the same time. Nathan continued to fire at the creatures. Each one he hit caught fire, and they ran outside. Despite this new discovery, the creatures were too many and were likely going to overpower us. We heard more gunfire from outside. We assumed it was backup. Some of the creatures went outside while others kept coming in. One snatched Jason with its talon-filled hands and pressed him against the wall. Blood gushed everywhere as Jackson squirmed helplessly. Nathan fired at the creature pinning Jackson, and the creature caught fire. Unlike the other creatures, this one continued to attack Jackson, slashing at him with his free hand. A man with a hazmat suit entered the trailer carrying a flamethrower and igniting both the creature and Jackson. The creature was much more responsive to this and dropped to the ground. Jackson lay lifeless on the ground as his body smoldered to a crisp char. The man in the hazmat suit aimed the flamethrower at me and Nathan.
"Name and rank,"
the man shouted. Nathan and I were both quick to respond. The man in the hazmat suit hesitated for a few seconds, but eventually lowered his weapon.
"You'll need to come with me."
The man in the hazmat suit walked outside to where there were dozens of people in hazmat suits. They were all carrying flamethrowers fighting these creatures that were coming in from all sides of the woods. There were four unmarked vans, one of which he guided us to. Nathan and I entered and the hazmat suit guy got in. He placed the flamethrower on the passenger seat and started driving. The hazmat guy got us out of there and started driving to the forest station that was still unfinished. We drove past it and continued to the military highway road that we were forbidden to be on. The road was still in the park area and was surrounded by woods. The night was dark and the snow really began to come down. The man driving was clearly panicked as he went faster than what we considered safe for snowy conditions. While we were driving, Nathan checked his shotgun. He noticed he only had two Dragon Breath shells left. The highway took us to the part of the park where we've never been before. The terrain became more rugged and mountainous. Everything was unfamiliar. The headlights beamed ahead and caught what appeared to be one of those creatures in the middle of the road. The man driving slammed on his brakes, but the conditions were so bad that he lost control. The vehicle hit the creature head-on but drove off the road and into the trees. Nathan and I were launched forward, slamming us violently into the seats in front of us. The creature was pinned between the unmarked van and the trees ahead, but continued to twitch slowly. The driver was unresponsive. The flamethrower was leaking fluid all over the seat. Nathan and I were dazed from the crash and slowly stumbled from the van. Nathan kept his shotgun, but I had lost my service pistol in the crash. I considered grabbing the flamethrower, but I saw that it was unsafe to use. There we were, just off this super restricted road that we should not have been on. To make matters worse, we were in the middle of the woods. We finally decided that our best bet was to continue on the restricted road and hoped it led us to someplace safe. I was lucky enough to still be wearing my Ranger's uniform. I had my flashlight in my pocket, which I took out and turned on. We could hear in the distance screeches and screams. We needed to hurry. We continued down the road for a ways when we saw a flashlight ahead. It was flashing as if someone was turning it on and off, as if to signal us. We sprinted forward to find Andrew standing in the middle of the road. He looked rough, but still alive. We were so glad to see him, we didn't even think to ask what had happened to him earlier. Andrew looked at us with this empty stare. He noticed Nathan's shotgun. Andrew seemed to be looking at us as if he was trying to size us up, as if he hadn't seen us in weeks. "Does that gun shoot fire?" Andrew asked. It was such a weird question, but we didn't know Andrew that well. Like I said earlier, I thought Andrew was socially awkward. He was always so quiet and hardly spoke. Nathan shook his head. "They hate fire," Andrew said coldly without looking away from the shotgun. "Look, we think to stay on the road is the best bet. Are you coming with us?" I asked Andrew. The question snapped Andrew out of his trance and he nodded. "I'll follow you," he said softly. We continued down the road for a ways. The snow got heavier. After 30 minutes of walking, the road then took a surprising turn into a tunnel that led into the hills. My heart sank as our only saved option would be to walk through this dark tunnel. Nathan led the way and I shined my light ahead of him to help him see. He had his shotgun ready and aimed as he walked. We walked into the tunnel that seemed to be well maintained. We continued in the dark tunnel until we couldn't see the entrance anymore. My dim flashlight sent small scattered beams of light in front of us. As we walked, we heard sprinting coming from the front of us. My flashlight had yet to detect anything coming when suddenly a figure appeared and attacked Nathan. Nathan, being caught by surprise, accidentally fired a round, missing the figure and illuminating the tunnel for a brief moment. The figure was now on top of Nathan and beating him with his fists. Instinctively, I jumped on the figure and got him off Nathan. All the while, Andrew watched us fight. After a few seconds of chaos, we were able to find the figure that attacked us. It was Andrew. Not the Andrew behind us, but there was another Andrew. There were two Andrews. The Andrew that attacked us told us that he thought we were one of those things. He then realized that there was another him, and he told us to shoot the other Andrew. The Andrew behind us got defensive and told us that he knew it was us, and he still attacked us. He was clearly a creature. Nathan swiveled his gun from one Andrew to the next, back and forth, debating on which one to shoot. "Which one do I shoot, Jason? They both look the same!" The two Andrews were now yelling at each other. They both looked identical. They were shoving each other so much that we got them mixed up. We had no idea which one was which. Nathan whispered to me, "Dude, I only have one shot. Which one do I shoot?" he said, panicking. One of the Andrews said, "Just shoot us both. That's the only way to be sure." Nathan then swiveled the shotgun over to the other Andrew, who started to protest, and shot. Flames erupted from the shotgun as the pellet clearly hit its target. Screams erupted from Andrew, but they were not like the screeches from before. He ignited into flames and lit up some of the tunnel. He fell to the ground without flailing. The other Andrew began to cackle a hideous laugh and transformed into this disgusting beast with twisted limbs and sharp teeth. Nathan knew right then and there he had picked the wrong Andrew. The creature imitating Andrew immediately attacked Nathan and began to eat him alive.